Hello and welcome to the first English Xbox Mojo episode. My name is Thomas and I've been running Xbox Mojo as a German Xbox podcast since November 2019. I'll have some great English speaking guests in the future, so we'll likely get some English speaking listeners. I'll separate the feeds for these two podcasts, so we'll have the regular German Xbox Mojo podcast with some English-speaking guests and this one with just English content. So please subscribe if you want to get the English episodes. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at Xbox Mojo. But who am I and what is Xbox Mojo? I used to work as a video game editor, including freelance work for publishers like Computec, Online Welten, and the print magazine Console AT. These companies are from the 2000s, and of course, all are from Germany or Austria, so it's no wonder that you haven't heard of them. It was a good time. I met Peter Molyneux at the Black and White premiere, and I interviewed him. Later, I met and interviewed Louis Castle, co-founder of Westwood. I've visited the German office of Atari and so on and so forth. I reported on all the consoles and got a PS2 for the launch from my first employer. But when the first rumors about the Xbox emerged, I was fascinated by the subject of a company like Microsoft entering the video game market. Sega failed with the Dreamcast and Sony dominated with the PS2. And that's where I found the idea of a new competitor refreshing, especially if the competitor was one of the largest corporations in the world. So I started an Xbox website called Xbox Arena, which was later renamed in XDome. At the time, it was probably the only one in Germany. I established contact with Microsoft and other development studios. I still remember how Microsoft sent me the Xbox with the entire German launch line up in March 2002 to finish all the reviews. I remember the first XO events, interviews with developer studios like Jaga, and how Xbox Live made console online gaming socially acceptable for me. The Xbox has always had a hard time in public, but maybe that's why I liked it. Microsoft as an underdog, refreshing. But I found Halo to Crimson Skies to Mech Assault or Knights of the Old Republic good. I also don't want to forget all the Sega games like Jet Set Radio Future or Panzer Dragoon Order. It was a really, really good time. For Xbox 360, I no longer had my Xbox website. It became a multi-platform one at some point, and then I devoted myself to other projects and later studies and university. But I like to play Xbox 360. I know how I skirted various department stores to get a launch console at the end of 2005. I think about this excellent launch lineup. Cameo, Project Gotham Racing 3, Perfect Dark Zero, Quake 4, Call of Duty 2, and so many more good games. Experienced The Elder Scrolls 4 Oblivion in spring 2006 and get the whole next-gen experience at the end of the year with Gears of War. In 2007, a milestone followed with Halo 3, and I had so much fun in multiplayer, plus Mass Effect and Bioshock. But because of my studies, I had less and less time and played less. In 2012, I found my way back to video games thanks to the Wii U, but I missed games like racing games. A year later, the Xbox One was an impulse buy at launch. After all the scandals and because of the Kinect, I only wanted to buy a PS4. The Drive Club shift and my desire for racing games turned my view to Forza Motorsport 5, and I purchased the console. Sure, I had watched the E3 video again beforehand, and I also wanted to play Killer Instinct and Titanfall. Bitter years followed. The operating system was unfinished and completely swapped. Games ran below expectations. The console was technically weak. Kinect was a drag. Many people at the management level were replaced. Games cancelled. Line had closed. You experience all of this yourself, and Xbox had lost its mojo. Phil Spencer took over, Play Anywhere was introduced, the Xbox One S, Elite Controller, Game Pass, Xbox One X, and studios were bought or founded all at once. Microsoft took the risk. I really had a feeling that Xbox was repositioning itself in all areas, and I found this development very interesting. So interesting that I talked extensively about Xbox E3 conference in my Nintendo podcast or much praised Game Pass. I felt like Xbox was trying to find their mojo again. And I'm so interested in this development that I wanted to accompany it on its journey. And that's how Xbox Mojo came about. Since E3 2018, I've been thinking about when to start the project. Unfortunately, I never recorded my E3 notes in audio form. I found the announcement of the XO19 extremely appropriate and so recorded the first German Xbox Mojo episode back then. But now, back to the present, I'm recording this episode to coincide with Xbox 20th birthday, and I think this is the ideal starting point for the English edition of Xbox Mojo. We celebrate the past, but look forward to the future, and it seems more than promising that we all experience how Xbox find its mojo again and over the next few years and regain its old strength. That's why I'll be talking to English-speaking people from the Xbox community at this point over the next few weeks and months, mostly other podcasters, journalists, or content creators. Now that I've introduced myself, we can move on to the latest news. For example, the Xbox anniversary stream, which I found very good. I enjoyed the introduction by Robbie Bach, 2001 Chief Xbox Officer. Overall, the birthday was celebrated appropriately, and above all, the community. I found the Xbox community to be a very welcoming, friendly community, which was well reflected in the stream. A 6-part documentary titled Power On, The Story of Xbox, will debut on different streaming platforms on December 13th. This documentary will chronicle the development history of the Xbox brand from the initial conception of the original Xbox up to the modern Xbox Series X. I'm looking forward to it because I see myself as a young editor writing about the OG Xbox. And since the past was celebrated, it was only logical that over 70 games have been announced for Xbox backwards compatibility. These games include the Max Payne series, the Fear series, both Otogis, Dead or Alive 1, 2, 3 and 4, Oddworld's Month's Odyssey, Red Dead Revolver, Gen Valkyrie, Binary Domain and so much more. In addition to those new games, 37 existing games in the Xbox library will get an FPS boost. Titles such as the Gears of War series, Cameo, Elements of Power, Nier, Fallout 3 and much more can now be played at a higher frame rate. Fallout 3 is currently at 4K 60fps on Xbox Series X. Delicious, and now I play this classic again. Sadly, Microsoft's latest batch of Xbox backwards compatibility games will be the program's final update. Peggy Lowe, Xbox Backcompat Lead, wrote last night, and I quote, "While we continue to stay focused on preserving and enhancing the art of games, we have reached the limit of our ability to bring new games to the catalog from the past due to licensing, legal and technical constraints." Quote end. Around 600 games from the OG Xbox and Xbox 360 era are included in the program, but not all fan favorites made it. Project Gotham Racing, Jet Set Radio Future, Shadow of the Hedgehog, Mech Assault, Reckless or Ninja Gaiden, for example. I currently own over 200 games from the program, and when this initiative was announced in 2015, that was really the starting point for the new Xbox. But there were more news. A teaser for the long-awaited live-action Halo TV show was shown off, but it was just a short teaser to promote the release date for 2022. The show will premiere on Paramount+. The icing on the cake is that Halo Infinite's multiplayer mode will be available to download for free right now on Xbox Series consoles, Xbox One consoles, and PC via Steam. Technically, the multiplayer mode is in beta form, and it does not contain the entire single-player campaign, which will launch on December 8th. But all progress will carry over to the full version. Even the first season, Heroes of Reach, kicked off after the stream, and it's extended to May 2022. Joseph Staten, head of creative for Halo Infinite, explained the extension, quote, "We made the decision to extend Season 1 to give ourselves more time to ensure Season 2 meets our high-quality bar, and so we can finish development for Season 2 in a healthy and sustainable way for our team." Quote end. So, 6 months instead of 3. Original, the plan was to release campaign co-op after the first season and Forge after 6 months. What is the current status now? Staten acknowledged these questions in the blog post without answering them. Quote, "In January, after all of you have had a chance to play Halo's Infinite expensive and adventure-filled campaign starting December 8th, and all of us on the Halo team have had an opportunity to recharge our energy shields over the holidays, we will have more details to share about the Season 1 event calendar as well as our Season 2 campaign co-op and Forge release plans." Quote end. So we have to wait till January for new info. But let's celebrate the start of Halo Infinite multiplayer now. Over 250,000 concurrent player on Steam, social media and my friends list are full of praise and everyone seems happy. I played Halo Infinite multiplayer a bit and I like it. Glad I didn't buy the new Battlefield because Halo multiplayer is all I need. I also purchased the Battle Pass because it will never expire, even with future releases of recent seasons. You can always go back and level up this Season 1 Battle Pass, but only one Battle Pass can be activated simultaneously. There is a new 100-tier system where you need to grind XP to progress the ranks and unlock some cosmetics on each level. My complaint is that I played 2 hours without unlocking level 1, and I have the feeling that the pre-match XP is relatively low or non-existent. It seems you have to challenge completions to level up. At the moment, this is my only problem with the game. I like the short tutorial with some story bits. The game itself runs soft as butter and is looking really good. No server crashes, always finding matches. Yeah, great experience so far. 343 did it. The king is back, I would say. I will talk more about Halo Infinite in the future. I just need more playtime. So, the anniversary stream was great, but we have another birthday. Xbox Series X and S are 1 year young. So, happy birthday, Xbox Series X and S. I'm still enthusiastic about the hardware. I still think the Xbox Series X is pretty simple, matte black monolith with a lot of power and quiet at the same time. I still remember how the Series X was announced and the critics laughed at the supposedly huge size. This only went on until the point when the PS5 was introduced, which is bolder in terms of design but looks big and strange. Not a pretty console. But back to the Xbox Series X, I'm pleasantly surprised at how many games run at 120 FPS. I thought that was just a marketing promise at the time. However, more important to me is how many games are now running in 60 FPS. Ray tracing or not, if there is a performance mode that allows a game to run in 60 FPS, I'll be there. Up until this generation, I thought 30 FPS would be perfectly fine for me, but now I know that I want 60 FPS always. I remember Spider-Man Miles Morales for the PS5. I played with ray tracing and 30 FPS, then switched to 60 FPS mode. I played a couple of hours and hit back. What did I find? The game jerky and almost unplayable. So back to the 60 FPS. The following vital point for me is the loading times. The Xbox One loaded for minutes and it can now be done in a few seconds, thanks to the SSD. The fast travel in Forza Horizon 5 is finally won, as you can jump over the map within 2 or 3 seconds. The speedier game starts, shorter loading times, that's why the upgrade was worth it for me. In theory, quick resume would be added, but I have to admit that even 1 year after the launch, I mostly quit and restart games and hardly ever use quick resume. All tablets die hard. The Xbox wireless controller is probably my favorite standard controller. Improved again compared to its predecessor, I also like the new control pad, which is a mixture of the disc of the Elite controller and regular D-pad. It lies comfortably in hand, quality fits, and I have no problems with battery operation. I would also like to highlight the limited controller positively because the one for Forza Horizon 5 has just been released. The color scheme looks wild, but I love the rubber coating on the handles. So good. It's a shame I never play with this one because, like my numerous other limited controllers, it is only for showcases. The controller for the 20th birthday would have to come to my place this week. The DualSense controller is more innovative due to adaptive triggers and haptic feedback. I was very fond of this controller when I first played Astro, but I quickly realized that very few games use these features. Most of the time, I don't find the implementation good enough, especially the adaptive trigger can also be annoying. I like haptic feedback better than rumble, and I could imagine that in the Xbox controller. A current topic for me is the expansion of storage space. With PS5, you have to unscrew the housing and install an SSD plate with a heatsink. I made it and installed a 2TB SSD, which was available on a special offer in September for only €350. At that time, it was reduced by maybe €100, and now 2 months later, this SSD is available for €450. I wouldn't have needed the SSD on the PS5. On the one hand, the game spaces there are usually more minor, and on the other hand, I usually only play exclusive games on the console and no service games, and then a little bit of PS4 backlog. It looks more critical for me concerning storage space on Xbox because I play service games on the Xbox, like Sea of Thieves, Halo Master Chief Collection, Halo Infinite, Forza Horizon 5, and then 300 or 400 GB are quickly gone. And I have a storage problem because I have to delete other service games like State of Decay 2 or The Elder Scrolls Online. Then there are Game Pass games that I try out and the single player games that I temporarily park until they have been played. I saved Xbox One games or 360 games on the external Xbox 2TB SSD that I bought last year for the launch of the Series X. But it would be nicer to have everything internally. And although I think the memory expansion card has been cleverly solved so that you only have to plug it into the back of the console, I never see myself operating several of these cards in parallel. I would lose track of it as I used to do with memory cards back in the day. US prices are $140 for the new 512 GB variant and $400 for the further 2 TB expansion. That's a lot of money, and you could buy a PS5 for that or almost a second Series X or whatever. But none of that would solve my storage problem, and my 2 TB PS5 expansion would have been just as expensive without the offer price at the time. I haven't pre-ordered anything yet, and I don't know if I'll get it started, but definitely at some point next year. If I have storage problems like this, the first year of gaming with Xbox Series X seems to have been very good, right? Definitely yes and no. When I look what I played a year ago, some titles come to my mind. Gears Tactics, where I unfortunately only played the first few missions until today. Good game, but I haven't been in a turn-based tactical game mood. I bought Artbook and found the gaming system to be perfect, to be a perfect fit for the Gears brand. My first backlog game of the new generation, if you will. Bright Memory is the worst Xbox Series X game I've played so far. After 30 or 40 minutes, you can be through. Okay, maybe it will take 60 minutes the first time, I don't know. I paid around €6 and felt cheated. Tetris Effect Connected was my favorite console launch game. HDR showcase and, yeah, a simply great match that was right in the Game Pass. Dirt 5 I bought in a sale a few weeks later and played it through. It didn't inspire me as much as its predecessor. WRC 9, I bought another rally game which I rarely played on Xbox, but I got the platinum trophy for PS5 as it served as a DualSense demo for me. Watch Dogs Legion and Assassin's Creed Valhalla, I bought it in pairs and haven't played it through to this day. With Watch Dogs, the 30 FPS annoyed me, and when the 60 FPS patch came in May or so, my interest was gone. I could give Valhalla another chance because I had a little over 10 hours of fun with it. Yakuza Like a Dragon, yeah, I bought it on offer, but haven't played it that long, so I could have saved it because it's now in Game Pass. The Falconeer was a disappointment for me as it didn't pick me up. I thought this was my game with all the trailers, and then I played it and stopped early. Not really played any further until today, but I will do it for sure. Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War could be unlocked by a trick on a weekend, and then I played through the campaign. It was okay. Overall, I would say that I had many games in terms of quantity, but not great highlights. And I admit that the podcast was a big part of why I bought so many games, but it wasn't like the original Xbox back then. There I was enthusiastic about Halo, Dead Alive 3, Project Gotham Racing, Oddworld's Munch Odyssey, and even Fusion Frenzy was great in multiplayer. In addition, there were games from third parties anyway. Well, what about the Xbox 360, Amped 3, Cameo, Perfect Dark Zero, Project Gotham Racing 3, supplemented with thirds like Call of Duty 2, Quake 4, Gun, or Condemned? Didn't even mention the sports games. Great launch overall. And even on Xbox One, I had a lot. Yes, the One picked me up more at launch than the PS4 could. Primarily, thanks to Forza Motorsport 5 and Killer Instinct. Rise is still underrated and better than its reputation, even if the game lacks variety. Dead Rising 3 was a next-gen showcase back then, and as a Panzer Dragoon fan, I even had fun with Crimson Dragon. Plus FIFA 14, Battlefield 4 and Need for Speed Rivals. I just missed the exclusive games on Series X. PS5 had Astro's Playroom, Sackboy, Spider-Man Remastered, Miles Morales and Demon's Souls. That was a strong lineup, and I played through everything except Demon's Souls. Plus exclusive indies like Bugsnax and The Pathless, both of which I haven't done yet. And the trend continued in 2021. Well, Destruction All-Stars was weak, but thanks to PS Plus, it was free at the time. Returnal was my current contender for Game of the Year for a long time. In the summer, with Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart came a game that spread a next-gen atmosphere. Supplemented with remasters for Ghost of Tsushima, Death Stranding and Final Fantasy VII Remake. Time-exclusive indies like Kena, but one of the best PS5 games of the year came from Xbox or Bethesda, Deathloop. With Gran Turismo 7, God of War and Horizon being postponed, the first PS5 year wasn't as great as expected a year ago. But concerning the exclusive titles, it is still terrific, and in my opinion, the point goes to Sony. Because Xbox took a long time, it wasn't until the end of July that the console version of the Flight Simulator was released, the first exclusive game from Xbox Game Studios since Gears Tactics. I never thought that there would be a break from November to July in this regard. But then it slowly picked up speed. Psychonauts 2 is one of the best games of the year. It came from an Xbox studio and was only released for other consoles because of old contracts. Thanks to Game Pass, I didn't have to pay for it, and the next-gen version is only available on Xbox Series X. There is only one PS4 version for Sony consoles without HDR, lower resolutions, and etc. Age of Empires 4 for PC and especially Forza Horizon 5 are great games. The latter should be the first crucial next-gen title for the new Xbox console for many. It's a shame that Deathloop isn't coming to Xbox until next year. That would have well rounded off the first year. And I don't want to leave the support for existing games unmentioned. Sea of Thieves with the Pirates of the Caribbean extension. State of Decay 2 gets the map of the first part as a free remaster. Minecraft Dungeons, Wasteland 3, Elder Scrolls Online, all games from Xbox Studios that got free or paid updates. Luckily, there is Game Pass because it saved the first Xbox Series X year for me. Call of the Sea, The Medium, Outriders, Scarlet Nexus, Doom Eternal, The Ascent, Art of Rally, Hades, A Plague Tale's Innocence, 12 Minutes, Myst, The Artful Escape, Octopath Traveler, Quake Remaster and Back 4 Blood are all games that I played thanks to Game Pass, and most of them I played through. Of course, I also bought third-party games like Hitman 3, Control Ultimate Edition, Resident Evil Village or Death Store, and I still have to play through the latter. Oh, and the Mass Effect Legendary Edition is my Game of the Year of the Heart anyway. So I didn't lack games. All good so far. Maybe I was missing a few highlights. Thanks to Game Pass, I also saved a lot of money and just tried out smaller titles. For 2022, I expect Game Pass to save the lineup again in the first half of the year. Stalker 2 is coming in April, and at some point A Plague Tale Requiem. I sincerely hope that Microsoft will also serve the first half of the year by 2023 at the latest. It will happen just because of the number of development studios out there. And for me, that is also the best thing about the first Xbox Series X year. It's just the beginning. The hardware is proper, and Game Pass is the best subscription service out there. The dashboard is finally in 4K. The only thing I'm missing is HDR. Smart delivery is a highly customer-friendly option for customers who want to switch from Xbox One to Xbox Series X. You get the next gen version automatically and free of charge, and saved games are transferred just as easy. It's a great deal. It has to be mentioned by now, as Sony did not solve this very well. Saves that are not compatible, there's only a chargeable upgrade, or you could accidentally download the PS4 version without realizing it. The foundation is laid and is very stable. Also, as far as the studios are concerned, because with 23 studios, Xbox has the largest studio network of all platform holders. The Bethesda acquisition was indeed a stroke of genius in solving this problem. Speaking of Bethesda, we know Redfall and Starfield will be exclusive on Xbox consoles and PC. In an interview with GQ, Xbox chief Phil Spencer confirmed that The Elder Scrolls 6 would be an Xbox exclusive as well. The future is bright and the mojo is coming back. And with that in mind, thank you for listening. Until then, happy gaming, your Thomas.